This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne. And
good job getting my name right.
Yeah, thank you. Today is Thursday. It's Big Thursday. Can you give me another ding for that, please?
I got to reach over to the bell.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Yeah.
God, you're needy.
Big time. All right, sounds like, okay, good. We got him on the hotline as we welcome you back in. Of course, Cougs.
Good job, Ben.
Cougs, yes, good job, Ben. Cougs in the Final Four in San Antonio this weekend. They'll be taking on the Duke Blue Devils, 7:49 tip. You can hear all the games this weekend on Sports Radio 610, so we're excited about that. And joining us right now to help break down that matchup, Auburn and Florida, obviously, this weekend as well. He was an NBA center for over a decade, of course, a North Carolina Tar Heel back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and today he is a college basketball analyst for CBS. Brendan Haywood joining us right now on Sports Radio 610. Brendan, Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne, good to talk to you. You're a Tar Heel. The Cougs are playing Duke, so you're basically a Coug this weekend, right?
Yes, I am. I'm definitely rooting for the Houston Cougars, the fighting Kelvin Sampson.
Yeah, the fighting Kelvin Sampson. So this is a team that kind of gets it done a little bit differently than the standard college basketball team these days, Brendan. In this day and age of NIL and the portal and everything else, the way Kelvin Sampson's put together an older team, can you speak to that a little bit and just the uniqueness of this and what he's accomplishing with this program, especially now that they bumped up to the Big 12?
Yeah, listen, when you talk about getting it done with older guys, and that's going to be more of a wave I think more coaches are going to try to do with the transfer portal and things of that nature. You got a guy that, yeah, he's transferring in, he's a little bit older, he's a little bit more mature, he's been through it. You don't have to teach him nearly as much, develop him nearly as much. I think Coach Sampson has really embodied that, taken advantage of that. And then he gets certain type of guys. You got to love to play defense if you're going to be part of Houston's program. He requires that. There's a certain level of toughness. You know, like he wants his guys to be tough. And when you watch Houston play, you see physicality, toughness, defensive intensity every single year. The names change, but the style stays the same, and they're going to need that style if they're taking on, if they're going to be able to beat these Duke Blue Devils, because this Duke team is incredible.
Yeah, Brendan, that's an interesting thing about Kelvin is that one thing that's been fun this college basketball season is Sean and I, Sean's been able to find just an incredible number of college basketball coaches flipping out in press conferences. And it seems like almost every single time it's got something to do with them whining and complaining about kids these days, that NIL is ruining this or ruining that, or these guys aren't tough or whatever. And then meanwhile, I feel kind of lucky because Kelvin Sampson will get testy in a press conference, but it's never about kids these days, because the guys he has on his team respond to a pretty old school style of coaching. How hard is it to to find those guys and to recruit them and keep them, like compared to maybe the way a lot of other coaches are going about it?
Well, first off, there's a lot of coaches complaining because their jobs got harder. Mm-hmm. So what? You pay a lot of money. So what? Get off the podium up here complaining. This kid wants to train. Okay, he wants to transfer. Fine. You can leave at any time. We knew that Will Wade was leaving before his team, and his team was still playing an NCAA tournament. Like, I don't like that. I hate the double standard a lot of these coaches have. Oh, they don't want players to do this, so they don't want. But then they want to be able to do whatever they want to do. Listen, the game is different. You can't walk in there with the name on the front of the jersey anymore and think the kid's going to go crazy. It's not that. They understand that now you have to pay guys a little bit. You have to pay guys. You have to make sure that they're compensated. There's different ways that you have to coach certain guys. And, yes, the game is changing. And we've seen a lot of the older guard retire, get out the way, and I'm cool with that. And Kelvin Sampson, to his credit, has done a great job doing it his way, and he gets guys that respond to his coaching. He does a great job of developing a defensive culture and just an overall culture at Houston. Like, look at how far the facilities have come from when Kelvin Sampson first got there to now. Mm-hmm. Like, no, like he just has totally upgraded that program, and I love the fact that he isn't out here sitting around crashing out in press conferences like some of these guys crying over spilt milk. Toughen up.
Brendan Haywood joining us on Sports Radio 610. Covers college basketball for CBS, of course, former NBA center joining us here on the show. Along those lines, and Brendan, we'll get into the matchups here themselves in just a second, but as long as you're talking about that, we've seen this, the way this tournament has played out, and it's the four number one seeds, and I think a lot of people are pointing to NIL and the portal as a reason for that. I'm curious your thoughts. I mean, you made two Final Fours at North Carolina. One of them, you were a one seed on a team with Vince Carter and Antoine Jameson. The other, you were an eight seed that people didn't expect to get there. As someone who's been on both sides of the Cinderella thing, so to speak, where do you come out on the argument that the lack of Cinderellas is negatively affecting the March Madness product?
I think people that think the lack of Cinderellas is negatively affecting March Madness don't pay attention to the numbers. Cinderella stories are always good, but when you look at the Final Four numbers, the proof is in the pudding. The fans don't want to see Cinderellas in the Final Four. They want the teams and the names that they know. They want the Carolinas, the Dukes, the UCLAs, like they Florida, they want these teams. Michigan State, they want – listen, this is great. We're about to see great basketball being played. Mm-hmm. Now, there might not be as many Cinderella runs because, obviously, the smaller schools, they're getting their really good players poached from them. And so that's going to make it a little bit tougher on the Cinderellas. This is also a one-year sample size, so let's not overreact and say Cinderella is dead. We don't know that for a fact. But it's going to be a little bit tougher on the smaller schools because you look at a team like Yale, well, the guy Danny Wolf that played at Michigan – he came from Yale. Yale's a totally different ball club if he's there. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe that team can make a run, but now he's at a bigger school. And so we're going to see a lot of things. We've seen a lot of that throughout the course of college basketball, and it's just one thing that we have to look at. And it is going to be tough on Cinderella, but that doesn't mean the product isn't good. I think this is one of the better Final Fours we've had. We got four number one seeds. They're all incredible, and I can't wait to watch this Final Four.
Speaking with Brendan Haywood. Brendan, if you're coaching Houston, if you're Kelvin Sampson, what's your game plan versus this Duke team?
Do what we do. Because what we do is how – the way that they play is the best way to beat Duke. We don't want to get into a track meet with these guys. They have better athletes. We want to slow it down. We want to make the game ugly and play defensive. We want this game played in the 60s. We want it to be just like the Purdue game. We want it to be 62-60. Mm-hmm. You want that game played at that type of pace, physical hand-to-hand combat. We're going to pressure these guys. You got to pressure Cooper Flagg. Pressure him. You got to pressure Konkan Upland. You got to get up into their space. Make them uncomfortable. And Houston is probably the best team in the Final Four at making people uncomfortable. And that's how you win the game. You want it to come down to a 1-2 possession game. Duke hasn't played in a lot of close games this year. You get that game in the 60s. The 70s is the highest it can go. and you want it to be a one or two possession game, but hopefully you can make the play.
We're talking to Brendan Haywood, covers college basketball for CBS, former NBA center. Hey, Brendan, you played against some really good Duke teams back in the late 90s and early 2000s. You look at a lot of the rankings through the different computer rankings of all-time basketball teams, and those 99 Duke teams and the 2001 Duke teams are among the best ever. This Duke team is on that list as well on some of those computer rankings. In your opinion, how good is this Duke team compared to some of the ones you played against back in the day?
Oh, I mean, this Duke team is incredible. They're top five in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. Yeah. Their best player is going to be number one in the draft, but he gets after it defensively. Mm-hmm. He does everything well, man. On a night where he's not shooting the ball well, you look up there and be like, well, he was 3-for-14, but he had 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 4 steals, and 3 blocks. And he was guarding our best player all game long. Like, this is an incredible team. You have 3 lottery picks, all competing at the defensive level, making sure they're able to win games in multitudes of ways. This Duke team is just as good as any Duke team that's ever come through Duke, in my opinion.
Brendan, okay, so you as a Tar Heel have a unique perspective on this. Sean and I do a little fun. It's a fun segment called 5 Reasons I Hate You that we'll do about opponents' teams. And we've never done one for Duke before. And right now the problem is we've got two.
Well, I got more than five.
Okay, good. Oh, good. I was hoping to get one out of you, but I was like, okay, we got all the standard ones from various people. give us a few from a unique perspective of a Tar Heel, a guy who played for UNC. Exactly, some reasons to hate Duke.
Okay, first of all, for my perspective, first and foremost, reason I hate Duke number one: Grant Hill's been unruly in the group chat this year. I need him to go to sleep. I'm tired of him texting the group chat talking crazy. I need him to get out of here. Reason number two why I hate the Duke Blue Devils: I don't like their fan base. Never have, never will. Always thought they were arrogant. Reason number three: I played way back in the day against Shane Battier, and I thought that he embodied that arrogance that I talked about with the fan base. So every time I see Duke play, I just see Shane Battier's face. Great guy, just never liked him in that space. He's a very good person. I'll say that again. Very good person. Never liked him in that space. Other reasons why not to like Duke. You know what? Never liked Coach K. Listen, I know he's not there anymore, but I don't even want the ghost of Coach K's spirit in this tournament to feel good about where Duke is right now. I like the way that Carolina sent him off to retirement a few years ago. My last reason not to like Duke is simply I don't like that shade of blue. Okay, the light shade of blue is the blue that you need. That dark blue, get that out of here. Yes. Okay, we don't need any of that. All right, you need that light blue in your life. Okay,
that's really, you know, that resonates with Houston. Yeah, that resonates with Houston. Yeah,
big time. Hey, Brendan, we've only got you for about 30 more seconds. That was outstanding, by the way. Hopefully, this is not the last time we talk to you. Who's cutting down the nets in San Antonio this weekend?
I said all that to say this. Are we talking about my heart, or are we talking about who I would bet on?
Give us both.
Okay. If I'm betting, I'd bet Duke. Okay, they got the best team, the best players, they all play.
Yeah.
But if I'm going with my heart, I'd say Florida.
Okay. Okay.
I'd say Florida.
Florida. All right.
That's why I had went in it on my bracket.
On your bracket. There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
I got Florida.
You'd be excommunicated from Tar Heel Nation if you put Duke in the champion spot on your bracket, right?
Nah, I'll never do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
I don't care how good they could have 15 pros. I'll always pick somebody to upset.
Hey, Brendan's appearance is brought to you by BetOnline, betonline.ag. Kind enough to give us Brendan Haywood here today. Hey, Brendan, we know we're up against it here. We'll cut you loose. That was a great conversation, man. Really enjoyed it. Keep up the great work, and hopefully we talk again down the road. Talk some Rockets basketball maybe or something down the road.
Hey, Rockets got something special going on, I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, appreciate that. All right, Brendan, we'll talk to you later, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take it easy. Yep.
Boy, he embraced that challenge. That was awesome.
He did.
I was hoping to get one out of him, and I thought there might be some hemming and hawing.
You wrote
but he
down,
went right into it.
Seth has a rundown open, so Seth and I can see each other typing things in the doc, and I saw Seth said, it's typed, give us one of five reasons to hate Duke. I'm like, this is going to be really good, because if you're a Tar Heel, you should be able to give at least, if he true Tar Heel, did what he did, which is push us up against the hard out that we have with him at 9:13, which he did. Yeah.
So Grant Hill, unruly in the group chat. He doesn't like their fan base.
Yeah.
Shane Battier embodies the arrogance of the fan base. We're a little dicey there because he did good things for the Rockets.
Yeah.
And yet it sounds like he said this to Shane Battier's face multiple times.
He said he's a good guy. Person.
Never liked Coach K.
Didn't say Coach K was a good person. he caveated Shane Battier. But he said never liked Coach K. The ghost of Coach K's spirit. That's great.
And he doesn't like the dark blue. Okay.
Yeah, that's all right. That's good. Good job, Brendan Haywood.
The Tar Heel blue is very close to Columbia blue and the old Houston H-Town blue and everything else.
Yeah, man.
So there we go.
Yep.
I do like, man, and I liked him just saying basically quit whining, college coaches. I mean, it is true. Kelvin Sampson would be the guy that you would think first, like, oh, boy. Guy like that, it's going to be hard in NIL. But he doesn't waste time whining about NIL or anything else like that. He just goes out and recruits players that are going to respond to his style of coaching, and it's pretty cool. It's the same. I always tell high school coaches when a high school coach starts bitching about kids these days.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, there's other coaches out there who are coaching the same kids who have better records than you.
That's exactly
so
right.
So maybe quit bitching about the kids and start coaching the kids better.
Yep. Yeah, it really is interesting, this confluence here in town that we've got going on right now of the Texans and the Rockets, and I'll throw the Cougs in there about how important it is to their program. I'll call the pro teams a program for purposes of this conversation, in finding the right kind of guys that that respond to, in the case of the Texans, respond to D'Amico Ryan's coaching and desire for that swarm mentality with the Rockets. And I think it's really cool with the Rockets to see, like, Jalen Green in the post-game press conference last night. Not the press conference, but in the locker room, talk about the importance of Ime Udoka changing his game around, you know, and kind of being that, he called him the head of the snake. Like, without him, we're just a bunch of talented guys. But with him, we've got this focus now. And now with Kelvin Sampson, and that might be the hardest of the three, because it's 18-year-old kids you're talking about, and going, okay, is this kid seems to be wired this way. Now, all of a sudden, Kelvin Sampson's getting guys who are getting their first crack at money now, you know?
Yeah.
Do they still follow his coaching tenets and things like that when he gets in there?
That's a lot of that is just being able to actually talk to kids and understand maybe and get a feel for how they're wired.
Yes.
But it's like qualifying your prospects in sales. Like, you just 100%. you don't want to make a sale where you know that the person's got a really good chance of, you know, second guessing themselves and returning it the next day.
Yes.
Like, for the really good salespeople, more goes into it than just making the sale right there.
Yeah.
They want to be sure there's somebody who's going to keep coming back, all that. I think for good coaches, especially now, the ability to figure that kind of stuff out matters way more than a lot of the rest of it.
Yeah.
You know, the flip side of it would be, you know, when the Longhorns went through that period where, hey, they had a bunch of five-star recruits all the time, and yet you couldn't translate it into actual success on the football field, or they were five-star recruits that didn't even end up being good college players. There's just you gotta know what you're actually looking for above and beyond just the superficial stuff.
No doubt. I saw an interview. I can't remember if it popped up on Twitter or my YouTube, but it was Kelvin Sampson was at a coaching clinic talking to a bunch of high school and college coaches, and he said that if you're trying to establish culture, if you're a passive aggressive person, you will fail. Every passive aggressive coach that he's seen in their management style fails in establishing a culture. You have to be comfortable having really uncomfortable, clear conversations with players.
Yeah. The problem with passive aggressiveness is that the message usually isn't heard to the people that need it the most, because they're so blind to that.
Yeah.
Like, they're just so clueless there's a lot of things about coaches, the way they communicate to an entire team, where, like, it's all the people hearing the message are the people that actually don't need the message. And
yes,
the people that I always, like, usually, from a football player's perspective, It's like the whole defense is getting reamed out basically because one guy's a jackass, and the guy who's a jackass is barely awake as the rant is going
Correct.
On. Where everybody else in the team is like, oh, I feel awful about myself. Ah, I'm the worst person alive. Ah, oh, are we really that bad?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. That was fun. So he just basically did our whole segment for us tomorrow. We'll come up with five more. It's Duke. As Brendan Haywood pointed out, only five? We can come up with more. He stole my coach.
It's Cooper Flagg just making it. Basically, what's the key to victory? Make Cooper Flagg. I hope he puts up 35 shots.
Yeah.
You know, like have it to be that kind of day.
Yes.
Where all of a sudden you force him into a situation where he feels like he wants to be the hero, except that you're still shutting him down while he's doing that.
I can't wait, man. I can't. It's going to be a fun game on Saturday. All right. Up next, Cal McNair talked to the media at the league meetings this week. Said the Texans, well, let's take a listen. Said the Texans are pretty close. We'll take inventory. Are they pretty close to getting to where the Texans want to go? That is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, you can text the show 713-572-4610. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. We had Nick Caserio on earlier. I'm guessing you'll be hearing parts of that interview on the station throughout the rest of the day. Today, you can listen to that interview on the Odyssey app, on our podcast, the Rewind feature, however it is you want to listen to it. Subscribe to the Payne and Pendergast podcast. Be one of the legions of fans that subscribe to it right now.
Yeah, we do well online for a couple of old guys.
We do. Not too bad. Not too bad.
It's a whole other, I mean, we do. We're not radio guys. We're live streamers.
That's it.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody.
Who happened to put our live stream out on the radio as well.
That's right. So Cal McNair and Hannah McNair met with the media in West Palm Beach this week at the league meetings. And here's what Cal McNair had to say about the state of the Texans right now, where the team is. They're looking to take another step.
Well, we want to win every game we go out. So that's, we haven't quite done that yet. And only one team has. But so this year compared to the year before coming off the playoff loss, we felt we were a little bit of ways. This year coming off the playoff loss, we felt we were pretty darn close. So I'm sure in the offseason the moves are making, and at the draft, and there'll be some more moves here all through training camp right up to the season, and then even in the season, I think we're looking to take another step and excited to see what happens.
The pundits would tell you, the odds makers would tell you, the Texans, in the eyes of the odds makers, are further away now than they were this time a year ago. Yes. Well, maybe. Okay.
No, that's good. That's the most objective way to look at it.
Yeah, I guess they. I mean, there. If you look at any Super Bowl odds board, the Texans are still favored significantly to win the AFC South. But I think the rest of the NFL looks at the AFC South like it's a Group of Five conference right now compared to the other divisions. They're anywhere from like 11th through 15th on any given odds board to win the Super Bowl. This time last year, keep in mind, this is the anniversary today of the Stephon Diggs trade. A year ago today, the Texans traded for Stephon Diggs, and that, I think, combined with Danielle Hunter signing with the team a couple weeks before that, shot the Texans to the moon on the odds board. Power rankings, odds board, top five everywhere for the Texans. They are not viewed the same now by that group of people as they were a year ago. Cal McNair says they feel they're closer now than they were a year ago. Where are you with where the Texans are right now as to compare to a year ago?
I think, if I just were to break it down by talent on the roster, I think they're closer now than they were then. I think that the defense is just, it's a fundamentally good defense. They have to clean some things up to be a genuine, if they clean a couple things up, they could be a genuinely great defense. But I trust them. I think last year there was a lot of enthusiasm about the promise the offense had shown going from 2023 into 2024. I was consistent with this throughout last offseason.
Yep.
I was not as convinced that the offense was going to be awesome because they hadn't been a good offense the year before. They'd been a promising offense. I was excited about the potential for it. But the big question was really whether or not Bobby Slowick was a good offensive coordinator. And he didn't prove that he was last year. So I think talent-wise, the additions they made in 2024 on defense were good ones, and they made sense. I think the addition of Joe Mixon was a good one. But really, the biggest question is Nick Caley a better offensive coordinator than Bobby Slowick? And we just have no way of knowing that. So I feel better and more solid about certain parts of the team, but Nick Caley is as much of an unknown right now as Bobby Slowick was. So I'd put it at a wash as far as whether they are in a better position or not to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, than they were last year. I think, look, obviously the people that had them touted that high up this time a year ago were wrong. They were not that team. I think they can be wrong this year, too, and maybe ranking them a little bit too low. To me, it's like, okay, if they're right about the offensive line, and being right about the offensive line doesn't mean that they go from being the 29th best offensive line to the third best offensive line.
Yeah.
Being right about the offensive line and what the tenor was in that room and having an offensive line that plays and feels like they genuinely care snap to snap. There were so many snaps last year where you had guys, few of whom are not in the building anymore, just like you'd point out, stop during plays, just look like they're uninterested in blocking
just
on screens. Stand around. If they have guys that are legitimately care and are just in its totality are average, like if you can go from 29th to 17th or 16th as an offensive line, then I think you do get back to where this team was maybe viewed at, you know, back in that neighborhood last
year. Well, and the whole thing about the whole thing about the offense in total, not just the offensive line, is that it was glaringly obviously on the offensive line. But the thing that was driving me insane more and more as the year went along was it was every position group making bad decisions or at times just looking like they didn't know what they were doing. And those screens, as much as, you know, they were awful at running screens, you got to remember on a lot of those screens, it was the receivers who didn't know who they were supposed to be blocking.
Yes.
At various moments in the run game and the pass game, it was the tight ends who didn't know what they were doing. And when the offensive coordinator gets up week after week saying about how we have to execute, when people in every position group are not executing properly, that's the offensive coordinator. It's so much less about the actual play calling as executing the plays that you call correctly. And that is on the offensive coordinator. It's not, you don't separate play calling from execution and say, nope, the play call is the responsibility of the offensive coordinator and the execution is the responsibility of the players. Ultimately, the offensive coordinator is responsible for all of that. And they didn't know what the hell they were doing in any given week. So if Caley is a competent offensive coordinator, there will be better execution. And I don't care as much about the play calling as I care about the execution.
Yeah.
They're just, you can do it. You can run whichever scheme or philosophy you want. If you run the plays correctly, you got a much better chance than having a brilliant play call that people aren't executing properly.
If you're a sales manager and you got a group of salespeople that by and large are not selling, the sales manager gets fired. You know, and the sales manager in this case is Bobby Slowick. Now, you fire a few of the salespeople as well, like they, you know, and I guess firing the salespeople would be getting rid of Laramie Tunsil and getting rid of Kenyon Green and cutting Shaq Mason, just wholesale changes. I feel good. Like they are going to be elite on one side of the football. The floor for this team, I think, is decently high. Like this team, barring C.J. Stroud getting abducted by aliens, I think the floor on this team is pretty high considering. You get six games inside the division. It's not a great division. You've got a defense that is talented and isn't too top-heavy. You're pretty good at all three levels of the defense, particularly at edge rusher and in the secondary, so you're going to force a lot of turnovers. That defense and your quarterback are going to go win you 8 or 9 games, even if you're not a very good football team.
Yeah, the defense and their ability to force turnovers, which, you know, that can kind of ebb and flow, but they're recovering the fumbles is the trickier one. There's just some random luck involved with that. But I think they're going to continue to get a lot of interceptions. Really, defensively, they got to stop letting up so many big plays.
Yes.
They do a lot of really good stuff for 95% of the snaps, but then they let up a huge play and kind of dash it all against the rocks. That's the one huge area of improvement that would turn them into a genuinely elite defense. And I think a lot of that was really a lot of that was youth in the secondary as much as it was anything else. So theoretically, that should get better, but sometimes guys don't get smarter as they get older.
How nervous do you think the people are that are organizing the draft party that Nick Caserio is going to trade out of the first round before the draft, or even worse, at the draft? You got everybody there already.
Yeah, I'm guessing they've got a plan for it.
I guess.
They've got like a little, maybe if they should do something like a giveaway if they do trade out, like a free t-shirt or something. If Casario trades out.
Yeah, trade out insurance, you know, like something to compensate them if they do. Yeah, because that, I mean, if he gets a Godfather, you know, some team wants to trade back into, like some team wants to trade back into the first round to get Jackson Dart, that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, like a team, you see that sometimes teams getting back into the first round to draft a quarterback. Lamar Jackson was one of those guys. You know, the Baltimore Ravens traded up to 32, so you get that extra fifth-year option on him. He gets a Godfather offer for like the 25th pick in the draft, and they trade out, and there's 8,000 people at Discovery Green waiting on the pick.
I'll give him maybe like a gift certificate for free hot dog and a drink or something.
You got to give him something, right? Don't you? You got to give him like a something at the team store or something like that.
I don't want to say they got to do it. I don't want to get my idea. I don't want to get my hands in their business or anything.
That's true.
But it might be a nice gesture.
It'd be a nice gesture. Good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think about that a lot.
Some kind of limited apparel or something.
Yeah. Something or a T-shirt that says "I was there when Nick screwed the draft party." You know, something.
There's somebody over at NRG Stadium right this moment being like, "You sons of bitches."
No, hey, you got to plan for these things, all right? I'm guessing they are.
Yeah, I'm just helping. That's just what I would do personally.
Yeah,
you know,
you do what you want. All right, another member.
I run my pro football team my way. You guys can run yours your way.
Yeah. Another member of the 610 staff said yesterday that they could whoop Seth's ass in a boxing match.
Seemed pretty damn confident about it, too. It wasn't just that. It was almost like I was the first person that they would pick to fight in a boxing match.
Very energetic, emphatic statement that they could do this. We'll let you hear that. And what did the listeners to that show think of that proclamation? We've got that for you coming up next.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, uncertainty, self-doubt, stressing about not knowing where to start. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
All right, so this happens from time to time on shows. You know, there's some sort of combative boxing element, some topic, MMA, whatever it may be. And whatever it is, it eventually steers around to, okay, who among us here, our coworkers, whose ass could I whoop? Who would win a boxing tournament amongst the Sports Radio 610 employees, personalities, on-air crew? That happened on Area 45 last night.
I'm aware. Yeah. I'm aware.
Patrick Creighton and Sean Bajani got into this discussion, and they were on this for about 3 or 4 minutes. The clip is too long to play unto itself, except for the highlight part that we're about to play here for purposes of Payne and Pendergast. My name never even came up, which I just assume that means that everybody would whoop my ass, which is probably true. Yeah. So I.
Yeah. No. But Bajani treated this thing like he was like he was in a prison movie.
Oh my god!
And decided he was going to go in and take on the biggest, strongest dude in the joint.
Yes.
Right off the bat, with confidence.
Yes.
Yeah.
And here's what it sounded like.
I say this with all due respect. I would whoop Seth's ass. Let's go right now. Like Sunday, boxing ring, baseball field, put the football player out there, put the wannabe out there, and let's go at it. I would whoop Seth's ass, and I would not listen to him try to talk me out of it.
Okay, that was the other thing that I should mention, because I listened to the whole long segment of this, is that what I came away with was a couple of things. One, Sean Bajani thinks that Clint Sterner could just roll through the entire staff.
Yes, like, true. Yeah, he put Clint up there. Yeah, like there was no chance.
Like
a
tank going through the Champs-Élysées back in World War II. And the second thing was that he thought that you would be more inclined to talk the person out of it who was challenging you. In other words, your response to Sean wanting to box you would be like, "Hey, we don't need to solve this with violence. You know, I don't think you want to do this." Yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like I think he's mistaken my kindness for weakness. I think I've gotten too laid back over these last few years.
Yeah, man.
I think because I'm a more calm, cool, and collected guy than I used to be, that he's forgotten something. But the other part of that too is, even if I were as psychotic as I used to be, when it comes to boxing, no. I respect the sweet science. Yeah. I'm not going to go out there and be flailing around like some idiot brawler that's going to wear myself out after 30 seconds.
Right.
Listen, would I win a boxing match versus an actual boxer, some middleweight? No. Not a guy that actually knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't know something about Sean Bajani's pugilistic skills or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was a Golden Gloves champion back in the day.
Maybe.
I've never heard of it.
Me neither. Yeah.
Bajani is wiry. He's very athletic and all of that. But look, I've got a reach. I don't think he'd land a punch. I would use my reach advantage to its full. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he's been training with Customato and he's going to employ a peekaboo style where he gets up inside me like Tyson did.
Like Tyson?
He closes the distance. He dodges and closes the distance super quickly and then gets up underneath me. So I've got the reach advantage. Yeah. He's not even going to get close to me.
Right.
I've got the power advantage, which isn't just about, remember, the absolute overall power, but it's when a guy is so much shorter than you and you have that height advantage, it's a lot easier to just rain down blows from above, which I would do liberally.
You have the high ground all the time on him.
Yeah, I got the angle of attack on him.
Yeah.
I'm going to use the clinched. If he thinks he's just going to bob and weave through all however many rounds we play, no, I'm going to wear his ass out with clinching. I got to find out which referee it is to see how much I can, get away with.
Like
that.
The tie-ups where they get in there and just kind of
like just kind of lean into him, really make him feel the weight.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out any advantage that he would possibly have, and I don't see where it is.
This is what I wonder about him too. Is like Sean looks like somebody who's in good shape. He's very slender, but sometimes guys are just naturally that shape and they haven't done the cardio for a long time. You know, like
he also does a lot of outdoor work. And
yeah, that's true. There's fences and things like that. Yeah, he's probably
But that's where the clinch helps you though too.
Yeah.
I can tell you this just from wrestling.
Yeah.
Because my brother wrestled in college. He was stuck between weight classes. He kept growing and he couldn't wrestle 190 anymore, so he had to wrestle 275.
Jesus.
So he would eat all day long to try to weigh 225, 230. And he was in better shape. Like he'd go out and run a mile, 3 minutes faster than any of those 275 pound guys. After a 275 pound guy leans on you for a full match, it wears on you.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
So, I don't, the dismissiveness with which he issued the challenge. That's the thing that bothered me the most.
Not win, whoop your ass.
Whoop my ass.
Whoop your ass.
He wouldn't land a punch. He'd be punching my forearms the entire bout, Sean. That's where he would land his punches.
No, I
are the judges awarding points for landing punches on my forearms?
You're a
now?
Minus 750 favorite in the book of Pendergast. Don't you know,
I'm doing this. The stance I'm using, if you're watching on the stream, is not a good boxing position. But I've got a microphone in my way.
That's right.
So yeah. Plus, what this is what he doesn't understand either. If he did land a punch, I've got an incredibly strong chin. I've played. Do you know how many concussions I've played through?
Right.
I have like the blows to the head I've taken in
Nothing.
My life.
Yeah.
It doesn't faze me a bit. I might let him have seven shots right off the bat.
I want to play the audio of the text page from their show, and I will. But the text coming into our show, I don't know. This is someone says IDK. I don't know. Seth has a crazy side to him. He might just snap. That's very funny to me. Release the beast, Seth, someone says.
Plus, he's got to understand, too. Now, Patrick kept making the point that I hit people for a living, and, you know, like, how could you go against somebody that hits people for a living? I don't know if it's a direct correlation in terms of just the whole, because it's obviously it's a different type of, but the big thing about playing defensive line is you've got to be really good with your hands.
Yes.
And the way I made up for not being all that great of an athlete as a defensive lineman was I was very, very good with my hands.
Oh, man.
So, like, when you're punching me, trust me, the exact same thing has been done to me by guys who are 6'6" and punch offensive linemen who punch professionally for a living.
Right.
I can see it coming. You're not gonna blind me with a jab that I just thought was coming out of nowhere.
Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Seth, didn't you get knocked out by a parking arm?
Didn't get knocked out. Didn't get knocked out. Bloodied, but I kept going.
He kept going.
I went and got my burrito.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then came back.
I got hit by the parking arm in the Greenway Plaza parking
and
garage.
Then,
but I walked into that Chipotle with a bloody face and said, "Damn it!"
And then went back.
Give me my burrito.
Walked back and beat the piss out of that parking arm. Here's what it sounded like on Area 45 last night. People responding to Sean Bajani's proclamation that he could whoop Seth Payne's ass in a boxing match.
What does this guy say? He goes, "Does Sean even know Seth? He's an animal when it comes to physical competition."
Can't believe you don't know these
from the 281. Yes. 20 years ago, he was. Absolutely. From the 346, "Shut your mouth, whip Seth's ass."
Shut your mouth.
Let's see. We got one from the 713. "Don't let the anger management fool you. Seth's farm boy ass would cook you. I don't care how long ago he left the farm, but farm toys," and I would imagine he meant farm boys, "fight different."
Apparently,
and I just
he
say
beat you in a spelling contest too.
I just say to all of that, SAWFT, soft, soft. Whoop your ass. Now that'd be fun.
All right.
It'll be fun.
It'll be fun.
So this thing's happening.
It's happening.
Apparently.
Well, he was saying in the long cut, like, or it might have been even the shortcut we just played, like, get the boxing ring out, put it in the middle of a baseball field, and let's go do this somewhere.
I feel like he's been training. I feel like Bajani's been going and doing. He's been taking lessons or something.
Training or no training? Well, okay. What if he's
at a gym?
How trained would he have to be for you to feel like he could possibly beat you?
The biggest thing is no, just from doing, like, if you've never done a charity boxing fight or anything, you don't really, or if you've never actually boxed or anything, you don't appreciate how physically grueling
it's
it
cardio,
is.
It's cardio, man. It is.
That would be the big. Yeah. If he could make it go a long time and then just avoid getting thumped and everything, there's a chance I might actually die on my feet out there. The endurance would be, he would definitely have, as long as he could keep it from getting in close, he'd have an advantage there. If it went the full, 3 to 5 rounds, however long we did.
Okay. Once that go die energy hits Seth, PC is going to need a new co-host.
It would be. I'd get it somewhere in the second round. I'd decide, like, nah, this sucks. This is too much work. And I'd just go for it. And I'd figure, like, all right, I'm either going to destroy him right now. But then if he withstood that barrage, then he'd have a really good chance because I wouldn't be able to lift my arms afterwards.
You're winning on the text page, like, at a 10-1 clip right now. There are a couple people saying Sean would win, but the best is how descriptive the people are that are picking you. If that fight happens, Seth might wind up in prison.
Clint would be a tough one because I don't have as big a size advantage over Clint, and then Clint's been working out.
He's in better shape now than he was a year ago. Yeah,
and he's obviously a very good athlete. So I don't know how it translates to boxing or anything. But like if we gave everybody 6 months to actually train, then that Clint would make me the most nervous.
Yeah. 6 months ain't going to do it for me. It could be 6 years. It could be whatever. However many there are in, I'm the equivalent of the 16 seed. Someone said on the text page, John Lopez. We welcome John Lopez and Reggie Attitude in. They are in the loop. Crosstalk sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing.
That's what I was waiting for.
Yeah, baby. Someone said on the text page that you used to box. Is that true?
Okay. I did. I'm a Hispanic from the barrio in San Antonio. It's kind of a birthright.
Oh, crap.
Okay. It's kind of a birthright. I boxed.
I'm not fighting Lopez.
No, it's been 40 years, but I did box in the Silver Gloves, which is the juniors.
Okay.
And then 1 year in the Golden Gloves.
How'd you do?
Okay. I got a story.
Okay. Let's go.
In the Golden Gloves, I was 9-0 in my first 9 fights.
Okay.
And then you can Google this. I fought a kid by the name of Mike Ayala.
Yeah.
Beat the hell out of me. Like, I didn't go down. That's my badge of honor.
Oh, you're like Rocky Balboa.
The old Homer Simpson?
He beat me to a pulp. I should have gone down in the first round.
I
had the face.
The gear on your face.
Mike Ayala went on to win the Bantamweight World Championship.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you had good reason. Made sense that he whooped your ass. Dude,
Ayala's brother. Tony Ayala Jr., remember him?
Yeah.
That's his big brother. His big brother was Mike Ayala. Just beat me to a pulp. But I was 9-0 at one point.
But that's where, maybe Bajani's got more of a background than I know about. Because the guys that are, like, the genuinely good boxers, Lopez, as you know, an amateur dude like me versus somebody that really knows what they're doing.
Yes.
No, I'm not fighting that guy.
Yes.
Those are the guys that tap you 3 times before you even realize you're in a fight.
And obviously all through high school I played basketball and football and I wrestled a little bit. There is nothing like boxing in terms of exhaustion.
Boxing stamina is insane.
There is nothing. I would be like just laying on the floor.
Yes.
Like there's nothing like it.
Mike Ayala has a Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah. He was a world champion.
Is Lopez on there?
Yeah. no, there's no Lopez on here. Yeah. It just says the only thing it says about his amateur career is he won the 1973 National Golden Gloves Flyweight Championship.
Yeah, that guy.
Is that your weight class?
I was up. These were like preliminary. You could fight, up or down.
Okay.
Up
and he won the National 1974 AAU Bantamweight Championship.
Yeah, that guy.
Went on to a pro career to much acclaim. Yeah. So along those lines, what is the question of the day today?
What athlete would you or could you take?
In a fight?
Yes. And of course, in order to make this as realistic, because I want to leave room for the people that want to be utterly not realistic. That's where Bashani is coming from.
Or want to take. You'd be scrapping.
Right. I'm also like I immediately was in the place where I'm thinking what former athletes.
Okay.
Like, I'm just going to abandon shame. I'm just going to take down some old cat that I have beef with. And I'm trying to figure out what's the right dude to have beef with that I would take down. But however you want to play
it. Can it be a sliding scale? I don't think there's a single athlete that I could beat. Could it be somebody in sports that I could
jerk? Oh, I love that.
Oh, that's what's
matter. Yeah, because I'll find Coach K.
We just changed the question.
Coach K will be a grease spot by the time I'm done with it.
I love
Coach
it.
K's on my
Coach
list.
Coach K, is he? Yeah, I would love to just get in the ring with Coach K and just splatter his brains all over the mat.
He's on my
rat
list.
Face. Worm that he is.
Yeah, I like this. Yes, the anger.
Yeah, I might have to go. I might go to the Final Four this weekend now. I bet he'll be there.
You'll
find him, tap him on the shoulder, and just blast him in the face. Yeah.
I've got unfinished business with Taylor Lewan. I think that's the one. Yeah.
You like him.
I told
now,
Taylor
though.
Lewan, I met him at training camp this year, and I told him how much I hated him when he was a player.
Mm-hmm.
I just got right out there with it. I was like, I used to talk a lot of smack about you. Hated you. And he's like, yeah, you got to, man. played against him. I never played against him. I was as a sports radio host.
Yes.
But he played for the Titans, and we had a good laugh about it.
Yeah, he took that as a compliment, I guarantee you. He's a
show.
Heel.
Oh, yeah.
How about showing Jim Nance?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
That's a solid one.
That's a solid fight.
How are we handicapping that?
Showing Jim Nance?
Show's got a nasty side to him.
He's got a nasty side to him. But if Jim Nance, does Jim Nance run 5Ks or anything like that at his age? Do we know?
No, I know idea he puts up portraits
but Jim,
of himself.
Yeah, Jim Nance, is he the one that don't eat vegetables?
No, that was...
That's Al Michaels.
That's Al Michaels.
Al Michaels doesn't eat vegetables.
Apologies. Okay. All play-by-plays look alike. I'm sorry.
He's never eaten a vegetable in his life.
Yeah.
Al Michaels?
No, never
eaten
a vegetable.
Really? He takes pride in this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Scoreboard. He's still around doing his job at a decent level. That's interesting.
That makes me mad sometimes. Yes. Because, like, obviously, there's things that, in theory, you should do to protect your health, and then there's so many anomalies of somebody that's like, yeah, I eat exclusively red meat.
Probably smoked two packs a day back in the day.
85 years of age.
Is that what he is?
No, I don't know.
He's 80.
He's got to be 80, right?
He's 80.
He called the Miracle on Ice back in 1980.
Yeah.
You have to understand, for a 30-something-year-old, like, once I get past 60, I have a hard time.
They're all the same.
Boy, I am breaking down this show versus Jim Nance fight. Nance clearly has the reach.
And but he's not a tough guy.
He's not a tough guy. No, show wins the nastiness battle like in like tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm asking, does Nance run 5Ks? Does he need to run 5Ks to win the cardio battle on the show Hughley? I don't know that he does.
Yeah.
All right.
I do love that you guys kept it to that boxing, because when I heard the audio, Bajani, I didn't go to the boxing place. And I was like, I feel like you have to go street fight, but also he died.
Boxing is Bajani's only chance to beat Seth.
Okay.
His only chance.
Right, right. Yeah. That's why I have the utmost respect for actual boxers. I mean, it's incredibly. But a street fight. That's a whole different deal.
Yeah, but I was like, if Sean is willing to go dirty, because I do know that your body has taken some knocks playing the car crash sport, then maybe he just goes, I'm hitting you in the eyes. I'm hitting all your weak spots that you've obviously dealt with. Like, I'm wondering if that's the way that you have to play.
He's got a diagram of Seth on his wall where Seth looks like the guy from Operation, the wacky doctor's game. Seth's injuries. Yeah. The big red nose. Yeah. That'd be cool.
Honestly, almost every fight I've ever been in has ended with me, like, holding somebody down to the ground and, like, until they just calm the hell down.
Stop it.
I'm way too afraid of getting arrested to ever just beat somebody to a pulp.
I don't know, man.
I also have the humility, because I had an older brother. I got my butt whooped a lot. I'm not one of these guys that claims I've never lost a fight or anything. Mm-hmm. Every time you hear, you know who does this? Marky Mark claims that he was in thousands of fights and never lost a fight. Well, you're lying.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't grow up in South Boston and get in fights every day and win every fight you were in. So you either didn't get in that many fights, or you're lying about never losing a fight.
Where I just remind Seth, as we sign off, he didn't say he'd win. He said he would whoop your ass.
Yeah, he said whoop my ass.
Whoop your ass.
And that's why I feel like Cataldi has problems coming up.
Okay.
I feel like Cataldi might go down, fellas.
The takes.
I feel like Cataldi might go down.
Take a mania tomorrow. Reggie, you're a genius.
The text line's a genius.
That's all right. That's all, you're a genius to utilize the text line.
Yes.
All right, we are done. Seth, antibodies to you. Get in the gym. Go start working that speed bag.
Antibodies and raining down overhand rights to you.
Have a steak and a beer. You don't need to worry.
There you go. All right. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM HD. To Houston, an Odyssey sports station.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers,
The podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sport, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.